Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamal captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself and Jay are delighted to welcome along Joe Smith. How's things, pal?
All right, chaps. Aye, good. Apart from last night's result.
Yeah, it's possibly going to be one of the more downbeats episode of the MSC podcast tonight. We're recording on the back of a 3-0 home defeat to Inverness. And Jay, I look back at Mark McGee's second spell at Fir Park so far. Kilmarnock in February, a 2-0 defeat that sent us into the playoff positions, and I think we all thought that a return of to the playoffs was a real possibility at that point in time. Possibly the lowest point of his second spell for sure, but that must be right up there, last night's result. Basically in the second half, everything that possibly could have went wrong, and we've ended up being convincingly defeated by a team that we should certainly be competing with, if not really expecting to beat it for Park.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, you would expect to have a shot on target against Inverness, Caledonian Thistle. When you can't even manage that, questions have to be asked. In terms of it being, you know, the lowest point in Mark McGee's second spell, I would argue that there's been a few. That's not, you know, to be overly negative. I'm not going to jump into the whole, you know, McGee out, and some of the patter during the game last night was a bit over the top. But, you know, getting torn apart 6-0 at Tynecastle, even getting obliterated 7-0 at Celtic Park at the end of last season, although it was a nothing game, you know, we've been embarrassed quite a couple of times, and last night was up there. It's one of those games where I think, I can't remember who it was I was talking to on the way out of the ground, but I was making the point, and I think I've said before on the podcast, there is a way to lose a football match. We're Motherwell fans, we're used to getting deep. Probably more often than not, but you don't mind when you've seen something that has inspired you or stirred you a bit. You've seen some hard work and you've just been beaten by a better side. Instead, last night was just atrocious. We started reasonably well. Richard Tate got a few good balls into the box. You had the chance that Moult had after a great touch with Bowman, but after that it was just, you know, nothing. That's the best you can really say about it. There was nothing. We completely ignored the midfield. We had no creativity on the park. And we spent the entire game with the game plan of Hennigan and McManus lumping the ball to Bowman and hoping he could flick it onto Moult. And to witness that, and, you know, you look back a couple of weeks ago when we dismantled Tamanakis in the first 20 minutes and the great attacking football, and we all kind of thought that the Mark McGee side of 2007-2008 was back. We're going to be playing quick attacking football. When you compare that to the long ball tactics and just absolute nonsense the last night, I just don't understand how we've got into this position. You know, weeks ago people would say, if things weren't going particularly well, the argument is always, well, give it a bit of time, it's early in the season, and it still is early in the season. But one of the phrases always used is, well, you know, leave it until we've at least had a round of games. Well, I think we've played 10 now, so Saturday will be, have us played a round of fixtures. Okay, it will be a second game against Ross County because we should have played Aberdeen. I think I'm right in saying that. But That'll be us in 11 fixtures. That'll be the first round of the games. And there's a good chance that we could be getting into the Dundee away game to start the next round of the games with a battle to see who's going to be bottom of the league. I just don't understand how we'll get into this position. We've got a lot of good players. I would say man for man, we've got a better team than Inverness Carrickthistle. But we did not look like a side that wanted to win. We did not look like a side that could win. And at no point did we attempt to rectify that. There was folk around us talking about changes that could and should be made after about 20, 30 minutes of the first half. And yet again, we wait until we're getting beat before we really actually try and make any changes. I just don't understand what's going on. And it's not even anger or sadness that you feel after the game like last night. It's more, I think, just complete, being scunnered. I think I noticed someone on Facebook said earlier that they were worried by just how many diehards had came away after the last couple of games, just being completely disillusioned by what's going on in the park. And that's worse, because if people are coming away angry and riled up, then at least there's a passion there. But I think that the football we're serving up at the moment is actually putting fans off. And when you consider the attendance in the first place last night, that's not a good position to be in.
Joe, we'll discuss Mark McGee in a bit more depth later on, but I think as a collective last night, we've got to look at the players, and there was plenty of them that really let themselves down and have been letting themselves down in recent times as well. I think my point there is the experienced guys really need to step up and be counted for just now, because we're going to what is a massive game on Saturday. To me, it's got the feeling of a bit of a make-or-break game in terms of the season.
I think your problem there, Sparrow, is your experienced guys are a year older. And, when you look at last season, if you look at, obviously, take away the fact that when McGee first came in, it looked like he wasn't going to turn it round last season, but then he did, and with a good second half of the season. And I think probably, when you look back at the players that played really well in the second half of last season, it's no surprise that we played well when Stevie Hamill was probably in the team. But now he's finished, as far as I'm concerned, and he wasn't there last night. But he's traditionally been the person, when the ball's at the centre half, he's the out ball. They were always looking for Hamill last season, and it looked like last night, it was just the long ball. Don't look for the fullbacks, just punt it right up to the striker. I think last season as well, you had the benefit in the centre of the park, Stephen Pearson and Marvin Johnson on the wing. And I think just those two players, no one in our team, has completely transformed things. I think when you look at Craig Clay, I don't have a problem with Craig Clay as a defensive player, but when you're in a home game, you're looking for a bit of attacking flair. You're looking for somebody that's going to have a bit of creativity in the middle of the park to pick out, bring the wingers into play, do something a bit different with the strikers. Craig Clay, he gets the ball and he basically turns backwards 9 times out of 10, and any time he does try to play a forward pass, it doesn't meet his target. So I think that's where the core frustration is for my end. When I'm watching that last night, I feel sorry a wee bit that we're still relying on Keith Lasley, because he looked a pale shadow, the player that we've been used to over the past 5-6 seasons. But it's no surprise, because he's a year older. He's only going to get worse because he's age. And I think that's something where we're sitting here, we're 11 games in. There's been a bit of bad luck in the fact that probably one of the players we were most excited about at the start of the season, McHugh, with his injuries. But other than that, McGee hasn't really signed that well this summer. He's unfortunately lost two of his best players, and he's not replaced them with players anywhere near a similar calibre.
Jay, I think there's a certain element of that down to budget. I don't think we can ignore that. There was talk at the Rail Society AGM that it was going to be the case that this season would be a wee bit more difficult. And then following that, the money from the Ladbrokes sponsorship deal would kick in, and we would actually be able to not to be kind of free spending, but we would be a wee bit more secure and we'd have a bit more revenue available. The point in Lasley, I actually disagree, I must admit, Joe. I thought that Lasley had another pretty decent evening last night. I thought he worked very hard and put in a lot of tackles. I thought Inverness actually tried to nullify him quite a bit of
treatment. Sorry, I thought in the second half, Spar, I thought he was wearing his ears in the second half. I think in the first half, I don't disagree. I thought, you know, and he always does look all right in the first half. But in the second half, for a full 90 minutes, the guy's needing a wee bit of a break, I think, for that perspective.
But in terms of Keith Lasley, I mean, you know, we can all make assessments on any player, but I think if you're talking about a central midfielder, a night where our game plan is just lumping the ball over every midfielder's head, I don't think it's the best game to be basing any opinions on a midfielder's performance.
Yeah, and you also look at, for instance, Ross McLean making his debut. It's all his home debut anyway. It's all good and well bringing on or shouting to bring on a winger in Lionel Lainsworth. But all that happened with McLean last night is the ball was lumped over his head constantly. I think it was Graham Toulis was talking about it today, saying that he was possibly suffering from a neck strain because all that he was doing was looking up into the sky for the ball being launched over the top of him time and time and time again. I don't understand. If you're going to play with a game plan and you're going to introduce these young guys in their proper roles, then you've got to actually try and style your game around it. And that's what frustrates me, the pigeonhole kind of tactics that Mark McGee deployed last night, and then the reluctance to change it until 2-0 down. It just smacks of not being able to admit you're wrong, which has been to his cost on a few occasions over his career, and I think that was certainly a case again last night.
In terms of the young guys, I mean, yeah, you have to say, I mean, I know Stevie Craigan has said in the past about how they get the ball down, they play really good football because they want to then go into the first team and play the same type of football. No, that's not what's happening currently. I would be, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if McLean and McMillan came off the park and kind of said to each other, oh, I can't wait to get back down to the under-20 so we can play some proper football. Because, you know, there's absolutely nothing about that last night that was, you know, attractive, attacking, passing football. It was just lump the ball up the park. And the problem is that Hennigan and McManus, for all they might be good defenders, they don't have good enough distribution to even play the long ball. I mean, Hennigan scuttered the ball at the park a couple of times when he was just trying to play the ball forward. McManus drilled it right at Inverness players. It's just, it was really, really poor. And of course, I mean, I agree entirely. I've had quite a bit of a rant, but not so much a rant, but you know, there's obviously something in the podcast blog today for myself that kind of touches on that idea. I think that McGee does fall down a lot in terms of thinking that he's capable of tactical masterstrokes going into games that result in some really bizarre decisions that we've seen since he's came back. And the problem about being quite an arrogant, egocentric manager is that to then make wholesale changes or big changes during a game is admitting that you have made mistakes in the first place. You would like to think that there are very few people who were in the stadium last night who wouldn't have said that we needed changes. I don't believe for a second that of anybody who was watching that game last night didn't watch what was happening after, you know, even 30, 40 minutes, but at least after, you know, 5, 10 minutes of the second half, wouldn't have been looking at it and saying, right, we need to change something, we need a more creative player, we need someone in the middle of the park who can put their foot in the ball and pack a pass, we need to do something. And the fact that we refused to do that until the game was lost is just beyond me. I don't get it, I don't understand. And I think I agree. The only thing I can say that it must be is a reluctance to change it, because to change it is to admit that it's wrong.
Yeah, and another thing, I kind of look back in the early game last season that we lost 3-1, and it's possibly the most convincing home defeat that McGee had so far in his second spell up until last night. And if, I remember that night that Inverness, they kind of played the same way. They contained for the best part of the first half and then kind of hoped to punish us on the break, but McGee should have known that. The case was in that game in November of last year, as they picked us off in the break in the first half and they went into a 3-0 lead. Eventually we got a consolation but couldn't kind of force our way back into the game. But it was a very similar structure to the game, and we started going to these long balls into the land of the Giants in Inverness centre half, and it just does not work. So you're a year on almost and he's still not learned these lessons. So when do we get to the point where it's just an absolutely fruitless process?
I think part of the problem was that if you look at the lineup was almost identical to how we lined up at Parkhead. But the problem was that the lineup at Parkhead was based and is playing quite defensively, trying to contain Celtic. We shouldn't be trying to contain Inverness Carlow Thistle. We should be going out and trying to get the ball further up the park and play it out of defence. Because if you can't do that in your home games, then you know you may as well gee up. And I think that's the main frustration that I've got. I think when you look at Inverness are slightly different this season to what they were last season. I don't think they were pressing as high up the park. And I think that's why we lost that 3-1 game. They were pressing the fullbacks every single time we had the ball in defence. But last night, it looked like there was going to be space. There was space for us to actually play. We just chose not to play.
Yeah, well, I certainly can't really disagree with that. I think that Inverness have traditionally got a style of play, though, and we should have been more wise to it. You've got to wonder, there was a two-week gap or a 10-day gap at least between the game at Celtic Park and the game last night. So we should have been a bit more wise in how Inverness would have set up, if not on the three games or the four games, because we played them in the Scottish Cup last year, of how they were going to set up. It just seemed very, very naive, and we got punished as a result of that.
Well, the Scottish Cup game last season is another good example of a situation where we completely changed the system. I'm pretty sure McGee even came out and sort of said that we had, you know, completely changed our style of play because presumably John Hughes is some sort of, you know, tactical visionary and he had to be stopped. And of course, we then again kind of a carbon copy of a few games that we've already mentioned that we kind of just didn't work. I think we all kind of knew it wasn't going to work from the start. And then no changes were made. And I think that's the concerning thing for me. Managers are human, they make mistakes. Everybody, you know, we all have different opinions. We're all going to go to every Motherwell game and think, well, I'd rather he was starting or I don't rate him. That's what happens. But I think the problem that's happening at Motherwell at the moment under Mark McGee and what's happening more and more, I've already mentioned, you know, the 6-0 at Tynecastle, the 3-0 up at Dingwall, that cup game against Inverness. These are examples of games where a lot of Motherwell fans, if not most Motherwell fans, obviously I can only speak from experience, Motherwell fans that we are obviously talking to before games, but the vast majority on those occasions realised that we weren't going to get anything out of the game as soon as the team was announced. And that's where there's a difference. We're not talking about hindsight. This isn't a case of football fans. You know, usually what happens is football fans love a bit of hindsight because it allows them to pat themselves on the back and say, see, I told you so. That isn't the case here. I mean, you look at that Tynecastle game where we put Chalmers and Hamill at fullback and Josh Law in midfield. And to a man, every single one of us who were talking about the game beforehand said, we are going to get horse today, just looking at the team. We basically created the circumstances to take a horse in before we'd even take to the field. Don't know if you'd be quite expecting it to be 6-0, but it happened. Up at Dingwall, Marvin Johnson comes out left back with Jake Taylor in front of him. Again, every person that was there said, what is the point of us going to this game? We're going to get torn apart because that won't work. We get beat. So we're not talking about simple managerial errors. We're talking about bizarre, you know, ill-conceived ideas of what should be happening. You know, overthinking it. Almost kind of wanting to do something completely out of the box so that if it works, you can kind of go, well, look at me, I'm a tactical genius. Because I don't really see any other logic behind such radical changes. And the problem is that time and time again, they're completely failing. And when they're failing, you know, a football match is 90 minutes. You've got 90 minutes to realise it's failing and change it. And, you know, he must be one of the most reluctant managers we've ever had to actually change, you know, the team selection that he's made in the first place. And that's the concerning thing. Because as much as we want to try and stay positive, do any of us really think that, you know, Saturday's game is a good chance at victory? I would expect that we might go into Saturday's game, we might start well, but if we don't, are we going to change it? Well, I've not seen anything to suggest that we're going to change it. So Ross County will know that. If they can come down to Firth Park and frustrate us for a little bit, then start to get the crowd on the team's back, then obviously take the game by the scruff of the neck, impose their game in the game. Impose their game in the match. Then, you know, is McGee going to react to that? Is he going to make changes? Is he going to bring subs on? I don't see any reason to believe he will do. And that's the concern. The concern is that we are now going into games knowing that we're going to be getting beat based on Mark McGee's team selection rather than a manager just not, you know, picking the right players. And that's the concern. Because if every single person, you know, can see that, or maybe not every single person, but if a lot of people can see that, then why can't the manager?
No, it's not just the selection, Jay. It's the tactics within the selection as well. I don't mind seeing a manager blooding some youth. And I've been quite impressed with the fact that in McGee's time, he gave opportunities to Ben Hall, he's gave opportunities to Chris Cadden, and these guys have came through. But now he's turned around, he's gave the opportunities to McMillan and McLean. But the way that he set the team out hasn't suited these guys at all last night. And my worry is that if he carries on playing the style of football that played last night, it's going to have an adverse effect on the boys.
Oh, absolutely. When we were in the pub before it and it was announced that they were playing, I'm not going to lie, during the week, I think when we were talking about the game, I had said that I felt there was some sort of ominous feeling about Motherwell at the moment, to the point that I actually went on to Sky Bet and had a wee look at how much it would be for, you know, the double of Inverness to win last night and Ross County winning Saturday. Didn't put it on, but it was 5-1 if anybody's interested. Because I just you know, during the week there, before the ball was kicked last night, I was just convinced we were going to lose both these games because there's something not right about what's going on the park. I don't know if that's because there's something right not going on off the park. You're right. I mean, for all week I was convinced that we were going to get beat last night, and yet once I saw the team, you know, I still didn't change my mind that we were going to get beat, but it did give me a little bit more interest. You know, when you find out that there's, you know, two guys who are under 20s playing, you know, it gives you a wee bit more interest. You're keen to go and see how they do. And you're completely right. There's no point in, you know, watching the under 20s, watching the great football they play, and they do play some fantastic football at times. There's no point in promoting them into a side that launches the ball at Bowman. Absolutely no point. It's utterly pointless. If you're going to put them in there, then utilise them, use them, and you know, give them the confidence to actually go and play football. Don't have them sitting there watching the ball getting lumped forward all the time. Because why would you want to be in that team? You know, I mean, I was kind of joking earlier, but part of me's not. I mean, why? If you're McMillan and McLean, and you're enjoying the attacking football and the success that it's breeding at under-20s level, why would you want to go and play in that team again?
No, it's a fair point. As we said, we're going to keep it pretty brief tonight, and I'm absolutely starving as well. But so, a quick one on the future of the manager. Personally, I still believe that Mark McGee's got it in him to turn it around. I don't think that Scottish football just now, and given the current financial climate, particularly at my little football club, that we can be affording to switch our manager on an almost yearly basis, regardless of whether the fans believe that because he wasn't a success, or the way that he... Not even that he wasn't a success. In his first spell, he was an undoubted success in his first season. Second season did sour a bit towards the end, and his circumstances and the way that he left weren't great. But I still believe he's got it in him to turn it around. He certainly turned it around last year. I don't think that fan power will be a determining factor in this. It's a results-driven game, and that essentially will be what dictates whether Mark McGee is still in charge in the coming months, years, or whatever, really. If he's getting results for Motherwell Football Club, then I personally can't see any reason for him being removed or relieved of his duties. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it pans out, Jay. Mark McGee's contract also expires at the end of the season. Maybe a mutual parting of ways then would be the best solution to the problem with the the large section of our fans now very much against the manager?
Well, I mean, it's actually difficult to work out exactly how big the, you know, the anti-McGee feeling is, because such things are always going to be the loudest. You know, at the ground, it's always going to be the folk moaning that tend to be loudest. On social media and forums, it's always going to be the folk. You know, we even look at us, we're all probably quite optimistic Motherwell fans, but yeah, we spend a lot of time in the podcast moaning, but are being critical, because that is what, you know, generates the most discussion and the most noise. So I'm not sure how big that section actually is at the moment. I have a lot of issues with Mark McGee's, as I said, ego and arrogance, and it's not because, you know, I watch his interviews and think, oh, I don't like that man. It's because I genuinely do think that it underpins a lot of his, what he does before games. I think it underpins his reluctance to make changes, and therefore it has an adverse effect on the team performance, has an adverse effect on the results that we're picking up. So I have issues with that. Do I think he's a decent manager? Absolutely. You know, you just have to look at what he did in his first spell, and you know, came very close to landing the Scotland job, which obviously doesn't necessarily mean you're a good manager these days, but it was still, you know, acknowledgement of the fact that he was getting success. And you look at some of the football we played and some of the results we got under McGee in the first spell, he is a decent enough manager at this level. The problem is that he doesn't think of himself as a decent enough manager at his level. He thinks he's far, far better than he really is. I don't think that someone with, you know, a massive ego is something that we can really afford long term as a Motherwell manager. I think that, as we've seen, again, yeah, you have to obviously go along with my way of thinking that the ego does have an effect. If you don't think it's got an effect, then fine. But if you do think it's got an effect and it's costing us results, then I don't see how it can really breed success long term. So I don't think that he's the answer long term. That's not subscribing to a lot of the anti-McGee feeling, as much as I may have my negative views about him. I think some of the abuse that he's taking has been absolutely unacceptable. That said, he was always going to have quite a short period of time to get it right. That's just the way football is. I remember saying it on one of the first podcasts we did after they got the job, that if Simo Vallecari, for example, had got it, he would have been afforded more time should things not go to plan. That's the way it goes. If there are folk who take over as manager who do not, you know, have the backing of everybody, or perhaps a bit of dislike about them, then they get less time, and we're seeing that. And the issue is that if things continue the way they're going, which I think they probably will do, that, you know, that dislike and that the pressure will continue to build. I don't think we'll sack him. I don't think there's any chance whatsoever that Mark McGee will be, you know, removed of his position during the season. I don't particularly think that there's any reason for him to resign at any point. I don't think his ego would allow him to do that. I think that he will be here for the season. And then in the summer, it will depend entirely on how the season's went. As I've said, I think he's a decent manager. We've got decent players. If we go back to basics and actually say, right, this is how we're going to play, this is who's going to fit into the system, we're going to get the ball down, we're going to pass it, now go and expect, go and play football, you know, go and do what we know you can, then we could turn this around, and you could be sitting in the summer wanting him to get a new deal, because he's managed to get us up challenging for the top six. But if we continue in the path we're going, where it's just genuinely shit and there's nothing inspiring happening in the park, then I think the club would be in quite an awkward position, because, you know, we're at a time when we're talking about you know, fan engagement officers and supporter liaison officers and that kind of idea. So it's all about getting fans engaged and getting them coming to games, and they're still, you know, trying to get the Welsh Society as a success. So it's all about engaging the fans and wanting the fans to be interested. And I think that if you get to the end of the season and things haven't changed, then I think the club would risk a serious backlash if they renewed his contract. You could argue that they risk that by awarding them the job in the first place. But I think that if he doesn't turn things around and we have a mediocre, you know, 10th, 11th position finish come the end of the season, I think if the club offered him a new deal, there would be a serious backlash in the support, and I'm not sure the club would be foolish enough to go down that route.
But Jay, I'd completely agree with you to an extent. The thing I would say is...
So you don't completely agree with him then?
To an extent. Everything that you've said... Aye, fine. The only thing that I think he needs to address is the quality of football, not necessarily the results, needs to improve quickly. You need to be walking away from a game thinking, actually, we tried our hardest, couple of bad breaks, we played some good football, and hard lines. That is what's happened.
It's been negative
football. We're not scoring a lot of goals. We're not creating a lot of chances. And we might not be shipping lots of goals for fun when we're playing, you know, the team's probably for third down. But we're just not creating enough chances at the other end to make it exciting enough. So when you're talking about, you know, your SLOs and your fan engagement officers and these fancy things, the fans will not turn up if we're not playing attractive football. Simple as that.
Oh no, absolutely. As I said earlier, there's a way to lose football matches, and the way that we're currently losing football matches, particularly last night, isn't it? It was farcical, and folk will be turned off by it. And that's what I mean. I think that if we continue the path that we're going at, then the club renewing his contract in the summer, and let's be honest, it's all hypothetical. We're 27, shouldn't be the 28th of October, because it's getting late. So there's not really any reason to be talking about the manager's future. It's obviously irrelevant at the moment because there is a very vocal, you know, that's the first time I can remember in quite a while when it's not just been isolated shouts. You actually had the end section singing "We're shite and we nowhere" and things like that, and I think that's when you have to start taking notice and you have to start realising that there is a feeling starting to grow, and it was already there, but it's starting to get more noticeable. There's more and more people starting to be whatever, losing confidence in McGee, or beginning to get a wee bit more annoyed with the lack of changes or whatever it is. And as that continues, then it does put the club in a difficult position come the end of the season. I don't think it's going to do so beforehand, because I think McGee will be here until the end of the season. But whether or not he signs or not, at the moment, I would hope he doesn't, because I've not seen anything. Yes, he did a good job to get us to fifth last season. Some managers do that. You know, you look at, I think it was Ricky Spraser. Did he not do it with Sunderland? They gave him the job and kept them up. A lot of managers get the job on the back of, you know, being a caretaker, coming in as a caretaker when a team's doing shit and keeping them up. Let's not get too carried away. He did well last campaign, but he's failed so far this season. And unfortunately, he is not the kind of name or the kind of manager who can get away with failing for much longer without there being a serious backlash.
Guys, what we'll do is we'll come back to this on Sunday or Monday, and we'll possibly be better placed. If you look at, we've lost the last three league games, but one of them was against Celtic, one of them was against a good Hearts side, and then one was against a Bang Anbridge Inverness side, albeit. But I think Saturday's a huge game, and we will be back to review whatever happens at Fir Park on Saturday. Look ahead to a fixture at Dundee on the 5th of November as well. Could be fireworks, lads. We will be back then, but thank you very much for your time, both of you.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having
on. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back at the start of next week. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
I need to find somebody to tear me away from the car crying babies and switchblade days, the bark of the unemployment hounds and the thud of the thick white skull on the ground. I won't die in the bony arms of the state to be laid to rest in the wake of a faded town. My home, there's a big white house at the end of the road. I see you wrapped in Egyptian thread in a marble garden, immune to the mess. If you leave this world in a rhinestone shroud, we could finally make your father proud. If I leave this world in a loaded daze, I'll finally have and eat my cake. I wanna die like a rich boy diving in a hydrocodone dream. You can die like a rich girl by me, or have the magazines will grieve. I wanna die like a rich boy bathing in a milk bath I could drown. I wanna die like a rich boy, even if we're as poor as we are now. I wanna die like a rich boy drowning in a lake that bears my name. You can die like a rich girl by me, flushed and radiant with fame. I wanna lie in state on the TV in a golden cardboard crown. I wanna die like a rich boy, even if we're as poor as we are now. Well, I find you now, so tear me away from the feral street they lumped us in. I'll be Shakespeare's moonstruck king. We can lose our minds at the top of the hill. We burn cash and carry a decadent flame into the night and beyond the grave.